Are you ready to cultivate confident, resilient, and mentally strong dancers? Introducing Lauren Ritchie's Mental Skills Masterclasses, designed to build dancers from the inside out. Join them live and online for a transformative journey where each month, dancers will dive deep into a different mental skill, including confidence, growth mindset, motivation, resilience, and stress regulation. In these engaging one-hour sessions, you will learn, reflect, and practice personalized mental skills, exercises, and techniques that you can immediately apply to your training, performances, and everyday life. This program is perfect for dancers age 12 and above who are committed to growth, curiosity, and community. Dancers can log on individually or as dance teams. And don't worry if the live classes don't align with your schedule, as sessions will be recorded and available online for viewing at your convenience. Visit www.withlauren.ca or follow the link below for more details and grab your information package today.
Why I loved Wesleyan was this, and I identified one of my lessons that I shared with you as the importance of rattling around in other people's universes. And I get this from Liz Lerman, who is, to me, one of the most important thought leaders in our field. Her book is Hiking the Horizontal, basically saying that art is not high and low, it's horizontal, and we're all on a continuum.
Hello and welcome to The Background Dancer. I'm your host, Jason Yup, and thank you for joining me with our community of passionate dance contributors from around the world and across different fields. In this podcast, I offer educational conversations and insightful tips to help you better understand all things offstage about this curious art form. Every year, thousands of people from across the United States and around the globe visit the Berkshires of Western Massachusetts to experience one of the oldest dance festivals in existence. But when you hear the name Jacob's Pillow, you may not necessarily imagine this place for what it is. A treasured 220-acre national landmark, recipient of the prestigious National Medal of Arts, and home to America's most influential dance icons, including the man who started it all, Ted Shawn. In 1931, modern dance pioneer Ted Shawn bought a mountaintop farm as an artistic retreat and alongside his wife, Ruth St. Denis, initiated the Denis Shawn Company that paved the way for the next generation of legendary dance makers such as Martha Graham, Charles Whiteman, and Doris Humphrey. Inspired by the Bible story of Jacob laying his head upon a rock and dreaming of a ladder to heaven, the property fought through a series of financial hardships to eventually establish a permanent committee and consolidate itself as the dance hub of the nation and a cornerstone of contemporary dance history. More recently, in January 2016, Pamela Tadji was announced as the new director of The Pillow after serving 16 years as the director of the Center for the Arts at Wesleyan University in Middletown, Connecticut, overseeing robust programming and acclaimed artistic initiatives for dance, music, theater, and the visual arts. Pamela succeeds Ella Barr, and will now set the artistic vision and strategic goals for all aspects of the organization, including festival programming, education, preservation, audience engagement, fundraising, marketing, and more. However, leadership at The Pillow isn't the only changing of guard, as at the top of Pamela's priority list is undoubtedly breathing new life back into the Doris Duke Theatre, which was ravaged by a fire in 2020 and has undergone reconstruction through generous donations from foundations such as the Doris Duke Charitable Foundation, as well as individuals helping to cover the project's estimated $30 million cost. In this episode, I'll be speaking to Pamela about her leadership lessons, helming the two-in-one director role, and how to establish a working culture at an internationally renowned cultural heritage center. Hello there, and a huge warm welcome to the background dancer, Pamela. I have been meaning to speak to you for a very, very long time now. So first of all, just thank you so much for taking the time out of your really busy schedule and the incredible work that you're doing at The Pillow to come and speak to me here. There's so much to learn from you as well as the entire institution that you're leading right now. So to start things off, how are you doing today?
I'm great. It's still have about 2 feet of snow on the ground here from the big snowstorm that we had, but it's sunny and completely beautiful. So it's one of those great pillow days.
Well, there is nothing more historical as a landmark than the pillow itself. Every time we go to educational class, dance history class, when I was studying my dance bachelor's, we always go through the pillow. Everything has to go through the pillow because of Ted Sean and Ruth St. Denis. So everything about American dance history, modern dance, starts at the pillow. And everything that has evolved there also came from the pillow. Now, it is quite a pleasure to not only speak to somebody leading the pillow, but also just kind of doing all the work to cover the entire history of this place itself. But today we're going to be focusing a lot more on your journey as well as the executive and artistic director of this institution. To kick things off, how did you actually get to Jacob's Pillow? And is it normal to have a position as both executive and artistic director at a place like The Pillow itself?
Well, I'm happy to tell you a little bit about my journey. Dance figured in my life as it related to theater. My first job was as an actor, and I knew that dance training, physical training was really important to my instrument. So I always did it and loved it through college. After college, I made the decision that I was no longer going to continue my journey as an actor, but I wanted to work in the service of artists. That led me first to Long Wharf Theater, a regional theater in New Haven, where I was for 10 years. And then before The Pillow, I was at Wesleyan University as the director of the Center for the Arts there for almost 17 years. And it's there where I really honed my passion for dancers and choreographers and how much we could learn from dancers and choreographers in terms of knowledge building, embodied knowledge. I just understood its power. And I learned this two ways. One, by putting choreographers in dialogue with non-arts faculty members and having students experience two types of research. One, creative research through embodiment and whatever research, history, biology, you know, the non-arts faculty person was doing. And those partnerships were so powerful. The faculty members were transformed. The students were transformed by thinking about biological processes, historical movements through the body, that I saw the power of this art form. The other way that I honed my expertise at Wesleyan was to create a dance series that didn't really exist there before. Wesleyan has a deep history in dance education, but not as much as a presenter. So I began to, I created a series which would bring people in Connecticut together to see contemporary work, experimental work, work that also explored other disciplinary domains. And both of those things made me love dance even more than theater. I think because of the fact that there are no words, and it's, in my mind, it hits you in a visceral way that even the barrier of words can stop us, whereas the body, we have body-to-body communication. And the job at The Pillow opened up. I'm very much of a mother. That's a big part of who I am. My last child had gone to college, so I knew I could take on a job that would require me to travel and be a bit more demanding than the job I had. So I made the transition in 2016 to be the executive and artistic director at Jacob's Pillow. And what I will say is that, in some organizations, those roles are separated and there's two people who do those roles. At The Pillow, there's always been one director. And I had experience in the business side, in the fundraising and marketing side, operations, facilities, et cetera. So I could hold that alongside my artistic curation And it is a big job, and I'm just very, very honored to be stewarding this, as you say, this historic place for this period of history.
Well, thank you for that. When I was curating guests to come and talk about dance management, the first institution that came to my mind was, of course, Jacob's Pillow, not only because of the history, but also I think the challenge that lied ahead for anyone who was helming that position as artistic as well as executive director. When I found out that it was a combination of both for your case, I was like, okay, this person I have to talk to. And I know it's very difficult because we talk a lot about leadership and, you know, the difference between arts as well as art administration. Most people actually kind of start from the artistic aspect and then sort of transition into sort of the more sort of organizational, let's say, administrative roles, right? At the background, Dancer, this podcast is focused on career transition and development. So let's get straight into lesson number one. Do core values really matter? The answer to that may be relative. For example, a particular value statement may be true for dancers, but have no meaning for producers. Or it could fit well in the office, yet seem irrelevant in the field. That's why creating a value statement is so difficult. It's challenging to reflect a truth that is shared throughout the organization, particularly one that crosses every classic organizing force used throughout society, ranging from geography to social economics, religious ideology, gender, education, and more. The Pillow's mission and value statements are simple yet comprehensive. On first impression, they resemble corporate buzzwords that have been rinsed and repeated. That's until you start connecting the dots and realize that the simplicity is what makes them understandable and adoptable by the slew of people representing the community across time. Each point is accompanied by an existing program created to deepen and diversify the Pillow's offerings. Under creation, for instance, the Pillow Lab and the Jacob's Pillow Dance Award serve to recognize the brightest minds in the nation. Under preservation, their renowned archives have assembled the most seminal art photography collections, films, library, and video viewing stations that are free and open to the public. Central to it all is their adoption of IDEA, which we'll get to later on. But as impressive and inspirational as core values are, just as many lose meaning today because they spring from a base of conflict and confusion, often empty words without a team's contribution. Hence, Pamela's tenure at the Pillow began with the collective transitioning from the I to a we by engaging both board and staff, workshopping together, and once again highlighting the importance of establishing shared values within an organization of such history and heritage. At every organization, I believe, I've been part of some that have this mission sharing, sort of mission statement kind of workshop at every start of every tenure, right? And it's really fun. It's also quite important to have these kinds of meetings, or let's say workshops, we say, because it kind of sets the ground, right? It sets the basis for everything that's going to come later on.
Right.
Now, my question to you is, how practical actually are these exercises in assuring that the values spoken, discussed in that workshop or those workshops actually are understood and then applied? Because we do a lot of these exercises. I'm not sure how, let's say, effective they can be to your experiences as a leader.
So, yes, you had asked me to focus in on lessons learned. And I will say that the importance of shared values has been key to my leadership here at Jacob's Pillow. And that came from the fact, I think, in part that I love Wesleyan University. I'm an alum of that school, but I was a department within a larger organization, right? It wasn't really within my purview to determine what the larger mission values were. I was so excited about helming an organization with the history that we have, but where is it going in the future? And what did we believe our mission and our values should be? So, the mission, in fact, we reviewed the statement first as a staff, then as a board, and we didn't touch it. We actually felt like it was succinctly what it is that we were here on earth to do. That if you think of a nonprofit organization is born in service of society, who makes contributions to fulfill that mission. And we felt that, yes, that was still true for Jacob's Pillow, that mission. But there were no statement of values. And I find that it's the how you do your work that is the thing that you anchor in, particularly in times of crisis. And God knows we've had a bunch of crises in the past 3 years. So not only did we work with the staff to come up with those values, but we took those values to the board. We honed them. We refined them down. We had many more, and we had to just get them to a succinct list. And they're very much alive, and I'll tell you how we keep them alive. First, in every performance review, you have to comment on how you've embodied the values of leadership, flexibility, integrity, sustainability, inclusion. You have to actually, you're evaluated based on your fulfillment of those values. And then periodically at staff meetings, we have people shout out another staff member on how they observed them embody integrity or flexibility, because we want to keep them in the ether. Any orientation that we have of a new staff member, whatever level they are, I and my deputy director, and just to say, I am the executive director, but I have a deputy director who is very much the chief operating officer of the organization. And the two of us meet with that new staff member because we want them to hear from us concrete examples of what we mean by integrity, sustainability, inclusion. So that's how we keep them alive at Jacob's Pillow. And they're on our website for everyone to see. And we share them with the artists who come on campus because we want to make sure that everybody understands sort of like what is the code of conduct here at the Pillow.
Now, adding on to integrity in terms of the professionalism that is the culture that you set at a particular organization. I have a weird one for you, but I felt like this is something that really piqued my curiosity as I kind of had more experience in different organizations myself. How much does the prestige of an organization, right, or an institution, or even just a brand of a company, influence the way that staff as well as board members ingrain such values?
You know, I don't think the prestige has anything to do with the values. I think, in fact, too many people ride on the prestige of their organizations without thinking about what those values should be. And I heard a very interesting statistic at a conference I went to in January, which was the majority of young people would rather work for an organization that has a lesser artistic reputation than a dedication to equity, inclusion, diversity, and access. That those values are so important that they, if they don't exist for a young person going to work in the arts, you know, the reputation doesn't matter as much as those particular values. And I found that really interesting. And it makes sense, right? Coming out of a pandemic, the racial reckoning that we went through as a country, the realization of, particularly in the arts, how many gig workers just lost their jobs. If we're going to work in this profession, then what are some of the terms? And so I think actually it's a mistake to ride on that reputation and that prestige.
Well, thank you for busting that myth. I've always had that in mind that, yeah, it is definitely something that may be playing in someone's mind when they sort of step into any sort of organization. But yes, as a leader, it is very important to sort of remind us that the prestige is just part of history. You have to create the future ahead of you, right? Let's then move into lesson number two. One of my favorite life stories is that of my Uncle Billy, who was once the general manager of Hyatt Regency Hotels. He often spoke about his trials and tribulations in the hospitality industry and how he eventually succeeded despite being a late bloomer. The secret? By always undertaking every available task until he understood and mastered everything in a hotel. Even as manager, he would sometimes clean rooms and do receptionist work alongside his juniors in those departments. As such, he was never short-handed nor outsmarted by his employees, even earning the trust and admiration of those around him due to his sheer dedication towards knowledge seeking. seeking. One of the Pillow's most prominent alumnus is Liz Lerman, a writer and choreographer who was once a recipient of the MacArthur Genius Grant Fellowship in 2002, and who also produced performances that integrate physics and genetics into dance. She proposed a contemporary mindset of learning by moving away from the conventionally vertical world in favor of what she calls hiking the horizontal. As work evolves into an increasingly non-hierarchical environment, specialization in one area is no longer a competitive advantage, with many employers preferring a breadth of ideas and skills that facilitate one's exploration through different subjects and personalities. In other words, flexibility and creativity make for a better long-term career. Now the leader of such a historical community, Pamela remains faithful to Liz's commitment to spending time in other domains, with people who are different from you, in order to understand more about oneself and one's organization through constantly changing times. However, etched permanently into the Pillow's lore are Liz's once famous words while teaching at a conference, and I quote, "Creativity is about rattling around in other people's universes." I have an uncle who actually has become one of the, let's say, best hotel managers. He's working in mainland China right now after he moved from Malaysia. And he used to tell me this story that when he first started out in the hotel industry, he was cleaning beds, he was cleaning food, he was just basically the person that cleans up everything after the guests leave. And he slowly worked his way up until he became the regional manager and then sort of the entire sort of branch and even executive level manager. And he said, the reason why I wanted to go through that, and I think at the time he said that it was his decision to actually take on those roles,
right,
because he didn't want to be in a position where someone could actually point out something he didn't know. So yeah, he wanted to go through everything, learn everything about the hotel industry and the hotel itself, so that he would understand every nook and cranny of the industry itself. And I found it so inspirational, because I think the expertise of a director lies primarily in their ability to lead and manage the individuals that make up a company, right? I think the Pillow has about 30 or so odd people working, and this is not a small number. So having that sort of responsibility for people can be quite a challenge. So there are always going to be times where you might feel a little bit of imposter syndrome, or you don't know something, you're not as well versed, but you still have to sort of make a decision. So could you break down your career and sort of maybe explain how each and every step of the way, these major steps that you have taken, and how have those steps sort of provided you with the knowledge and confidence, actually, most importantly, to now helm this position?
I would say at every step of the way, and I tell this story, I was given a job that I was not qualified to do. And I had to find out how to do it. So my first job after I transitioned from my acting career was to be the director of development at the Schubert Performing Arts Center in New Haven, where I was for 2 years before I went to Long Wharf Theater, where I held the same position and then also did marketing, director of marketing there. I did both development and marketing. And in that first time, I think people saw in me someone who was curious and knew how to ask questions and knew what she didn't know. The most important thing is to admit when you don't know something and seek out how it's truly the sign of a leader, someone who can stop someone and say, I don't really understand what you just said there. It's not a sign of weakness. And I think I've always loved asking that sort of basic question and learning. And so as a director of development, I was a very good writer. I knew how to write grant proposals, but being a development director, you have to do sponsorship and annual giving, et cetera. So I read, I found colleagues. I used my talents to create systems and to be curious enough to know, so that I could then advance to being, I went from a presenting theater house to a producing theater house. Obviously, as someone who was an actor, I wanted to be where things were being rehearsed and costumes were being made. And I was a part of a very historic regional theater. And same thing, having colleagues, people who do my job in other places, so I can pick up the phone and say, I don't know how to do this. Can you help? And being that kind of reciprocal mentor or support to other people in our profession, I think that that has been key. So I really got the job at Long Wharf because I knew development and I taught it to myself in 2 years. And I don't say that with any sort of, I say that with great humility that it was pretty terrifying, but I did learn enough to raise money. So I had a track record by the time I was a candidate for the Long Wharf job. And then in the case of Wesleyan, a multidisciplinary art center, 11 buildings, a contemporary art gallery, 2 concert halls, a theater. And I had a meeting with the president, Doug Bennett, who was a major mentor of mine. And when I said, what does success look like in 5 years? He said, I don't know. You have to tell us. And the idea that someone would have faith in my vision and I could formulate what that could be after 12 years of being a support to someone else was the kind of confidence, you know, that gave me a platform. And again, I was quiet a lot. I listened a lot. I asked questions. I learned from history. I was a history major in college. So, you know, I care deeply about lessons that can be taught, you know, through history. So then in the case of Jacob's Pillow, because I had this deep bench in dance, I was absolutely a candidate, but the other candidates, you know, I was told afterwards were solely dance focused. And I was a pretty unusual candidate coming from a multidisciplinary center, but I do think that it is sort of the complications that I and the provocations of what could dance do vis-a-vis other disciplines that made me perhaps more future leaning in my thinking. And I guess that's sort of why one of the reasons why I may have landed this position. But I think the lesson there is just understand what you don't know and find out and trust your innate gifts in an interview and try to show them who you are so that they can say, what would it be like to work with this person? I think I'd like to do that. Even though this person doesn't have X, Y, and Z, I do think they're the kind of person I want to, you know, be around. And I think that's probably how I've gotten where I am.
Hey, Jason here with a special message for you to help and continue serving our beloved performing arts community. So here's what you can do. Share this with one person you believe who this episode can benefit and attach a personal note explaining why. This way, you are not only helping me grow this show, but also adding value to those you truly care about. Massive appreciation, as it means the world to me. And let's get right back to the show. Now, thank you for saying curiosity, multidisciplinary. I think those elements have a real ability to help people sort of progress through careers, especially when you delve yourself into a lot of different domains. Knowledge not only helps, but also just sort of the relationships that you build with people, right, across the entire industry that kind of help you, let's say, attain such a position. Now, dance is, like sports, I think, one of the careers we can say that has a very short lifespan compared to many others, right? Now, compounded by the often lack of appreciation that the industry actually suffers from, I wanted to get your thoughts on what do you think about career progression? At The Background Dancer, we like to say that there is this sort of linear kind of concept to careers. Firstly, you have the career planning phase, and then you have the career development phase. And last but not least, you have the career transition phase. And I think as a dancer, it's just something quite innate that you have to think about because it's such a short career to have. And it's a career that's filled with tons of risks. So in your own experiences, how has career development and transition actually helped you become the artistic and executive director of Pillow?
Well, first to comment on dancers and transitions, dancers are some of the best staff that I've ever had because of their self-discipline, because of their ability to improvise, because of their ability to bring it when they need to. You know, there are so many gifts that you learn in dance training that can translate to, let's say I've only worked in the arts, but the arts workplace or administration workplace. For me, I think it's in the transitions that in that great unknowing when you start a new job that you push yourself and you grow. And so I'm one of these long-term people. I've only had a job that was 2 years, you know, when I was 24, and then a 10-year, and then a almost 17-year, and now I'm in a 7 year. So that's the kind of that's what I do is I build relationships, I build programming, and I want to see them through. So I think the one of the things to keep why I loved Wesleyan was this, and I identified one of my lessons that I shared with you as the importance of rattling around in other people's universes. And I get this from Liz Lerman, who is to me one of the most important thought leaders in our field. Her book is Hiking the Horizontal, basically saying that art is not high and low, it's horizontal, and we're all on a continuum of work in the arts. And I think at Wesleyan, why I was able to stay as long as I did, because I was always rattling around in someone else's universe. I was going to an astronomer's office and understanding what they were exploring and how the arts could enhance what they were doing. I was, you know, on the river in Middletown, Connecticut, on the Connecticut River, learning from a climate scientist. So I find that that you always have to put yourself in other domains and you bring that richness back to what you do. You will make a connection. There'll be a metaphor. There'll be a biological process that is a metaphor for some problem that you're having, and you'll make that connection. And that's really exciting. So I think the lesson here is just that transitions can be hard, but they can also be hugely educational.
Let's now move into our final lesson and talk about me here and now. As an inspiring leader, I struggle with the common conundrum of whether leaders are born or made. Admittedly, I'm more biased towards the latter, being a psychology graduate and fervent advocate of nurture over nature myself. But across various experiences throughout my life, I've come to learn that being a leader means so much more than mere skills and determined work ethic. The thing that sticks out to me, though, is mindfulness and the capacity to be both present and forgiving of yourself. Being present as a leader is about much more than simply showing up or being in the room. Lots of leaders show up, but are not in the moment. They find themselves distracted by whatever other crisis, issue, or meeting they have to deal with, and this really undermines their ability to gather the necessary intel and effectively judge situations to make the best decisions. Such an in-demand job brings about high-octane pressure and the weight of an entire organization upon a leader's shoulders. One mistake leads to self-criticism, which then leads to self-doubt, which eventually leads to severe self-victimization and degrading mental health. So Pamela turned to none other than her very husband for advice. Three words: me, here, now. A subtle expression emphasizing empathy and trust as fundamental to her leadership approach. In Pamela's own words, "I think it's about learning forgiveness. I cannot do everything at the level that I would like to because my plate is so full. It helps me tremendously to be in this moment and not thinking about 10 minutes or 10 days from now. As long as I'm focused and I know that I'm truly doing the best that I can during the time that I have with the tools I have access to, then it's okay if everything doesn't come out precisely the way I envision it." I really love how this lesson was written, because it kind of goes back to you as Pamela once again, and just the person itself, the person that has not only helmed the position, but also have this incredible impact on the organization that you're leading right now. Now, I'm going to bring in a dance analogy right here. Injury prevention is always better than recovery. So likewise, what are your go-to strategies, let's say, or tools, as you mentioned in the lesson itself, for dealing with all these pressures, the scrutiny, and sometimes, or even oftentimes, the disappointments of being a leader of such a landmark organization? What is your cheat code? Hey everyone, if you're like me and prioritize online privacy and security, you're going to love NordVPN. Not only does NordVPN safeguard your internet connection and protect your personal data from hackers and snoopers, but it also offers an amazing advantage: seamless access to geo-blocked content on platforms like Netflix. With NordVPN, you can browse the web with peace of mind and enjoy your favorite shows and movies from anywhere in the world. Plus, their user-friendly interface makes it easy for anyone to stay protected online. And here's the best part. NordVPN offers a 30-day money-back guarantee, so you can try it risk-free. Trust me, I've been using this for 2 years now, and it has totally changed my life. What's more, you can get the basic plan for as low as $5 a month. By signing up through the referral link below, you not only support your online peace of mind, but also help me and the continuity of this show. So, sign up for NordVPN today, and let's serve smarter and safer together.
So, great question. Well, the expression that I sent you for my last lesson is me here now. And this was coined by my husband, Jerry Zinser, who's an artist. And he actually painted an image with these words that my daughter could take to college with her, because she's very much like me, and she does a million things and has high expectations of herself. But his point was, you can only do one thing at a time, and you have to be present to that one thing. You can't be in the past or in the future. You have to be in the now. And so when I get overwhelmed, I think of me here now, and I can only do this one thing right now with the tools that I have, with the time that I have. And it's the minute that that negative message comes in your head, instead of saying what I'm not doing, what I'm not getting done, what I'm not accomplishing, and the negative Nelly that stands on your shoulder, it's trying to turn that out around. And it's very hard sometimes to say, no, but this is what I am doing. I am doing this here now. So another thing that I will just invoke my friend Liz Lerman, who I was just like saying, this isn't happening. And, you know, just really, she said, like, what if you just forgave yourself? What if you just, what if of all the things that you go, just forgive yourself for this moment, and like, don't have this huge expectation, and just relax that a little bit. And sometimes I have to have a conversation with myself. The other is to anchor myself in what's important. And that goes back to values. If I know that I'm operating with integrity, that my intentions are good, then I can accept a failure. I can accept a mistake. I can apologize. So I just want to say that, you know, I have a number of inner conversations with myself that I need to have when I'm feeling overwhelmed. But that's where it goes back to Jacob's Pillow, is unlike other organizations without this huge and amazing history, I can anchor myself in that. I can say, no matter what, we are a place that people can go to and make discoveries and build community. And that is such a gift. So if the bells and whistles don't all happen, you know, it's okay. We'll always have that core strength. And I think that having a great team, I was just saying a minute ago that the time that you take to find a good team of people that you can rely on to be able to delegate to say, actually, I cannot do this myself. So I'm going to have to trust this person to get this, whatever it is, done for me, and then let it go and not feel like I have to control it. That's been really exciting in the curatorial process here. 3 years ago, I made the decision that it was no longer right to have a single gatekeeper, a single white gatekeeper of this white legacy organization. So I invited two associate curators, two women of color, to join me in the decision-making. And that has been an incredibly enriching experience for me, because I have the pool of artists that I have loved, or the aesthetic that I gravitate to, because we are all, it's all subjective. But these two people have their own artists that they're excited about and can make that compelling curatorial rationale for why they should be supported. And that has been, it's harder. It takes more time to design by committee. It's much easier to be the impresario who picks up the phone and says, I want you for, you know, much harder to sort of negotiate. Okay, we've got these five choices. Go back to our values. Go back to the aims of this season. Have we accomplish what we want? I guess we have too many of this, so we better let this go as much as we want it, because we've got to find a that to fill out what our curatorial aims are. So I have great respect for Melanie George and Ali Rosa Salas, who've been my associate curators and my team, along with Ariana Massery, our producing director, transition now to Holly Jones. So having a great team makes it so that things can get a little less overwhelming sometimes.
Now, one final point on this lesson is going and circling back on the idea of forgiveness. Uh-huh. The saying always goes, it's easy to forgive, not to forget, right? So just to kind of finish off on this lesson plan here, like, how have you been able to utilize the magic and the beauty of memories, both good and bad, mostly maybe bad because it's hard to forget those ones, to spur you on to great heights? Because that is what epitomizes a good leader, right? Somebody who is also able to use their failures to kind of spur them on, fill them on, and once again, like you said, go through very, very testing times. So do you also do that as a leader? Do you also go inside and find those negative moments and those memories, keep them there, and almost use them as sort of like a booster charge when it comes to really hard times?
Mm-hmm. First of all, I think reflection time, it's a privilege. It's a bonus when you can have it. You know, it's not always there. So I think having time to reflect on those mistakes, I have to try not to dwell on mistakes and failures. Sometimes they are a little too present, to tell you the truth. So yes, they do inspire me in that. And I so appreciate, I think another thing about someone in my position is I want feedback. I want someone, and I, you know, say in my meetings with my performance reviews, you know, what can I do? How could I be a different supervisor? Because it is, you don't, you know, and that's why your other colleagues are very important to you. You don't have a lot of feedback. You've got to provide yourself your own feedback. So yes, I am inspired probably by, for sure, I'm motivated by the times that I've stumbled. But I'm also, what propels me is the future, not the past. I'm like not really good at writing long, you know, reports on, you know, tell us what you did for this grant. Well, luckily we have a wonderful grants writer who can do this. I'm a future person. Like, we did that last year. You know? So if anything, I'm future leaning, and don't like to dwell in the past. Except when it comes to the history of Jacob's Pillow, then I love to spend time in the archives and remind myself of all the amazing people who've been here.
Now, just to wrap things up, this has been quite a joy, and I usually finish things with a very special question that kind of zones back in on Pamela yourself. What do you think makes a dancer?
Oh, I think you see it right away. It's someone who has a very seamless mind-body connection and has something that they want to communicate. And it comes to out in every pore of the dancer's body. You see it in that moment. So I think it's what makes a dancer is the power of intention. Yes, you can have great technique, you can be trained, but if you don't know why you're there in that moment, where you're going, and that intention can get you through any kind of technical issue. But there's nothing worse than watching a dancer who is technologically proficient but has nothing going on. And so I think what makes a dancer is that amazing connection to the body that we all crave when we watch it. We just say, oh, look at how they use their instrument to convey, to provoke, to tell a story. You know, I just think that it's about the power of intention. That's what I look for in a dancer.
Well, Pamela, I just want to say thank you so much for everything, your knowledge, your generosity, and just your humility in sharing everything that you have shared with me so far. And also for the listeners, when we talk about dance, we talk about the Jacob's Pillow and you being the leader of it. I'm super appreciative that you've given us this moment of your day. So with that, I just want to say thank you once again for coming on to The Background Dancer. And I really wish, I'll be watching from afar, but I really, really wish that Jacob's Pillow will bounce back stronger than ever. The new theater, the renovation, and of course, the festival happening again really soon, 2023. Can't wait for that. Everybody hopefully will be there with a smile on their face. So thank you once again for being here today with me, Pamela.
Thank you, Jason. Thank you for your questions, for your curiosity. It's so important that you're doing this podcast for our field. So thank you for your work and keep it up.
Pamela Tadji has been my guest today, and you have been listening to episode 2 of a brand new season titled Leadership at Jacob's Pillow. Be sure to check out the show notes for links and references mentioned throughout our conversation, or you can visit our website at www.backgrounddancer.com, that's 2 D's, for all related information. Despite being the figurehead of such an institution, I was truly inspired by her humility and willingness to share her knowledge to more dance leaders of the future. For more, consider purchasing the full version ad-free for only $3, or access the entire year's catalogue of 20 episodes for only $55. While a single purchase grants you access to episode transcripts and weekly online hangouts exclusive to the Background Dancer community, the latter premium package will come with additional benefits such as bonus unreleased episodes and monthly one-on-one career consultancy sessions with me as I provide you with insights on navigating the world of dance through my decade-long experiences within various facets of the industry. Lastly, don't forget to leave a 5-star review here on the podcast, as well as like and subscribe on the Background Dancer YouTube channel. And reach out if you have any other dance ideas that you'd like me to either cover or even perks to provide. In our next entry, we'll switch our attention from management to media. Stay tuned for my conversation with the editor-in-chief of Dance Spirit magazine and voice of the Dance Edit podcast, Margaret Führer. Have a great week, and I'll see you in the next one. Calling all dance educators and leaders, whether it's through a professional development weekend, day, or workshop, Lauren Ritchie is passionate about connecting with fellow educators who are in the trenches, pouring their hearts into their work with unwavering dedication. From navigating stress and perfectionism to fostering confidence and resilience in dancers, Lauren provides invaluable guidance on supporting students through every step of their journey. Because, let's face it, our work changes lives, and it's most impactful when teachers embrace, communicate, and practice mental skills themselves. Join her online teacher workshops and education sessions, where you explore topics like understanding the brain stages of your students, enhancing motivation, effective feedback strategies, preparing for competition, and fostering team cohesion. Ready to transform your teaching approach and empower your students like never before? Reach out today to learn more at www.withlauren.ca/teacher-workshops or click the link in the show notes below.